This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. In 1993, the International War Crimes Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia was established. Its charge, to try the perpetrators of war crimes committed in the former Yugoslavia during the 1990s. Georgia State University professor Jelena Sobotic will be at Western Michigan University tomorrow to discuss what has happened with the War Crimes Tribunal. She is originally from Serbia and moved to the United States in 1999 for graduate school. Sobotic is the author of Hijacked Justice, Dealing with the Past in the Balkans. Her address at the Fetzer Center tomorrow is called Crisis at The Hague, What Has Gone Wrong with the International War Crimes Trials. Jelena Sobotic, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Can you give our listeners an idea, perhaps refresh their memories, because this has been now a couple decades back. What were the war crimes that were actually committed, or things which could be called war crimes in a tribunal?
Sure. The war started in Croatia in 1991, and then it soon spread to Bosnia in 1992. There were many atrocities from the very beginning, including crimes against humanity, such as indiscriminate killing of civilians, rounding up of civilians in deportation camps, concentration camps, there were torture camps, and ultimately there were cases of genocide where people were killed solely because of their religious affiliation or their ethnic group. The most notorious case of genocide was the case of Srebrenica in Bosnia, where over the course of 5 days in July 1995, more than 7,000 Muslim boys and men were killed by the Bosnian Serb forces. The war ended soon after a short international NATO intervention, and also the peace talks that were negotiated by the Clinton administration in 1995.
So then the International Criminal Tribunal was set up for the try war crimes in the former Yugoslavia. If this had worked perfectly, what would have happened from there?
The idea behind organizing war crimes tribunal at the international level is really to build on what was a perceived success of post-World War II Nuremberg trials in Germany of Nazi officials. And the idea was that the Nuremberg trials really helped change the political path that Germany was on after World War II. It exposed the atrocities of the Nazi regime. It helped German society confront the responsibility and set in motion a very broad transformation of German society so that today it's a completely different country. So the idea was that having something like this, both for the former Yugoslavia and also for Rwanda, because Rwanda was undergoing a terrible genocide in 1994, so the same idea was to create an international tribunal for Rwanda. And the point of it all is to make sure that there's no impunity for war crimes, crimes against humanity and genocide, that this is a message that is sent to other leaders in future potential conflicts, that the world has changed, international rules and norms have changed, and leaders can no longer get away with civilian killing the way perhaps they could throughout the 20th century and even sooner. So the idea behind it is really to put in motion a sense of inevitability of justice, that the world is different and that justice will prevail, that victims will get a say in court, that victims and survivors will have a chance to tell their story and to have the perpetrators confront them, acknowledge the atrocities, and the appropriate punishment will then be administered. A secondary role that these tribunals were supposed to provide is to offer some kind of a historical transcript. And by that, I mean a story, a narrative of what has really happened. Because as I've mentioned earlier, there's tremendous amounts of misinformation, propaganda, denial in most of these countries. And so by providing a historical transcript, something that we know is a fact for sure, the denial would be able to go away, or it would be combated in a way that's more sustainable.
So what would you say is the track record of the War Crimes Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia? Is it something that accomplished those goals, accomplished some of them, or did it leave much more to be desired than that?
I think the record is very mixed, but it's not necessarily because I think the court itself suffered a lot of problems. I think mostly the record is mixed because the expectations on the court were so huge and immense. And the problems that these countries face after conflict are simply not difficult to solve them in a legal setting. So in terms of the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, it has indicted more than 160 people. It has completed about 140 cases. It has convicted more than 70 people. So these are good, successful prosecutions. But when you think about the scope and the magnitude of what was going on in the 90s in the former Yugoslavia, having 74 or so people convicted for these massive crimes, in many ways doesn't seem like enough. And this is why the momentum has been to shift from only prosecuting at the international level at The Hague, but also moving these prosecutions for mid-level and lower-level perpetrators more to domestic courts. And I think in that sense, I would say the legacy of the criminal tribunal is strongest in setting up a precedent that domestic courts can actually begin prosecuting for war crimes, because before the international trial began, none of that was ongoing in either of the countries of the former Yugoslavia.
There's a phrase that comes up when you read up on this called transitional justice. Explain what that means.
Transitional justice is a set of mechanisms that countries design after conflict to deal with legacies of past violence. They can be trials of perpetrators. They can be truth commissions that are not legal bodies, but more research initiatives where victims talk about their stories, give testimony, and then a research team writes up the narrative about what has happened and usually distributes this broadly in society as a form of report. In some countries like South Africa, truth commissions actually put perpetrators directly in contact face-to-face with survivors and victims and ask them to apologize in exchange for amnesty. That is a very controversial practice that may have worked in South Africa, but has not really been repeated since. There are many other mechanisms of transitional justice that countries can choose from, and increasingly countries are choosing some of these mechanisms. For example, memorials, reparations, restitution, for example, changing street names into names of victims or putting a different day of memory on a national calendar so that a particular day of memory of victims becomes part of what a country memorializes and remembers every year. So there's a variety of different mechanisms of transitional justice that countries have been able to choose from. And in many ways, the legal mechanisms, the war crimes trials that can be either domestic or international, perhaps have the least potential to lead to social repair. Some of these other mechanisms, I think, are more prone to providing a better social benefit.
Explain that a little bit. Why do you think some of the other methods may actually be better than a war crimes tribunal?
I think for many victims, it is more meaningful to hear what has happened from a perpetrator, to hear an apology, and to also have the government acknowledge their suffering and provide them with reparations that can be either financial or in kind. For example, provide scholarships for their children to go to school, or provide something that we would understand in the United States as an affirmative action for victims, or something that actually helps people heal in a way that's more meaningful than finding out that a perpetrator who may have not actually directly killed your relative but may have put the policies in place or was maybe a commander gets 15 years in prison. Now, for some victims, these jail sentences are meaningful. But for many of the victims that I've talked to, they want something different. They want a social benefit. They want a personal benefit. They would like to have a memorial in their town, or they would like to have a park that memorializes victims, or a monument that symbolizes their suffering.
There was an interesting exchange in the New York Times in late 2012. David Harland
who's executive director of the Center for Humanitarian Dialogue, wrote an op-ed in which he said that almost no one had been held to account for the atrocities in the former Yugoslavia. And he said at that time, it appears that no one will be. You then wrote a letter to the Times responding to that, and you said that Mr. Harland had, in fact, missed the point of the tribunal, which is not to deliver justice for past wrongs equally for all sides, fostering reconciliation, but to carefully measure each case on its own merits. And I'm wondering if maybe that's a little bit of what you're getting into there, that this is a legal proceeding, and therefore there has to be a careful weighing of the evidence, and perhaps that leads to a somewhat unsatisfying ending for the people who lost family members or other things like that in the course of genocide.
That's exactly right. My problem with the Harman piece was that the argument that he made was that nobody at the international level will now be convicted for crimes against the Serbian civilians. And he wrote that right after the acquittal of Croatian generals for charges of crimes against humanity against Serb civilians. And in a very technical and legal sense, yes, of course, he's correct. After these acquittals, there will no longer be cases in front of the International Criminal Tribunal for crimes against Serbian civilians. This was the one big case. The two Croatian generals were acquitted, and so now the story about Serbian civilians is probably closed at the tribunal. But and so this is true, but the problem with the interpretation that this is somehow the problem of the court is to argue that the court's job is to prosecute all sides equally at all times, and even to put a kind of a numerical percentage value of 30% of crimes by Bosnia, 30% of crimes by Croatians, 30% of crimes by Serbs, which is just simply not the case of the court. Now, I also have some issues with the way in which this acquittal of Croatian generals was justified by the judges, and we can talk about what was perhaps wrong with acquitting them. But that is not to say that the entire principle that the International Criminal Court is built on is not justified. All that means is that the Croatian domestic court should now pick up where the Hague Tribunal left off and open up their own investigations of Croatian generals or officers who were guilty or presumed guilty for crimes against Serbian civilians. So this should now be the job of Croatian domestic trials. I don't think this should be an indictment of the Hague Tribunal.
So let me give you the chance there to explain a little bit. You say that there are some problems you have with the acquittals. What are those?
The problems with acquittals, especially the series of acquittals that happened in 2012 and early 2013, is that in many ways they were contradicting each other, and they were contradicting the law as was set by the same court. So the lower level chamber initially convicted these Croatian generals of crimes against humanity against about 200,000 Serbian civilians who were forced to leave their homes in August of 1995 by Croatian troops that were advancing in this particular area of Croatia. Then the appeals chamber took on the case and provided a very difficult to understand and contradictory decision that was also very contentious within the chamber, so the decision was split, so even the appeals chamber could not be unanimous in overturning the conviction. And the argument that they gave is that the lower chamber was too quick to find guilt on a real technicality, which is how many meters can you shell a house from, and then if it's more than 200 meters, we should determine that that was a targeted attack. If it's less than 200 meters, then we can say it's a collateral damage. And so on that very technical issue about how many meters before a target you can declare something as collateral damage or intentional damage, these people were convicted. So the appeals chamber said this is too flimsy of an argument. We're talking about putting these people in prison for a very long time. You did not make a case. And these people were acquitted. The problem is that throughout the history of the criminal tribunal, that same measurement was used in previous cases. So how come all of a sudden we are now saying that that's a flimsy argument when it worked so well for previous cases? So there are a lot of issues with how the case law and the precedent in front of the Hague Tribunal is actually changing. It's changing in course. It's new and fresh, and in many ways, these judges are making law as they go along, which is fine, but you get to these decisions that seem really contradictory with what the precedent has been determined so far.
So what do the results of the International War Crimes Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia mean for future efforts at transitional justice, reconciliation, or perhaps even future war crimes tribunals for other countries?
I think the biggest legacy, the most important legacy of the Hague Tribunal, as well as the Rwandan International Criminal Tribunal, is to set the stage for how really high-up-level leaders, heads of state, politicians can really be charged and successfully convicted for tremendous human rights abuses. The basis of the permanent international criminal court that was established in 1998 and started working in 2003 is really, the basis of it is in the Hague Tribunal for Yugoslavia and the Arusha Tribunal for Tanzania. So we now have an idea about how to prosecute high-level perpetrators for types of crimes that until very recently they would be completely free of any suspicion of, really. I also think it's very important that the presence of these tribunals opened up the idea in domestic courts, that domestic courts can open prosecutions. Prior to international trials, no domestic court was really interested in prosecuting their own generals or their own officers. Now we have domestic prosecutions in Serbia, we have domestic prosecutions in Croatia, we have domestic prosecutions in Bosnia, in Kosovo. And these are really important precedents for building domestic criminal law about war crimes. And finally, in many ways, the testimony and the witness testimony that has happened in these cases in The Hague have pierced the veil of denial in many countries. There was a lot of footage, for example, video footage of atrocities committed by Serbian paramilitary troops in Srebrenica during the genocide that I mentioned earlier, that really made it impossible for Serbian people to say that this has not happened. So in many ways, the narrative about what we did has changed as a consequence of the prosecutions at The Hague, and this is something that I think will really have a lasting legacy in the region.
Ilona Sobotic, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Ilona Sobotic is a professor at Georgia State University. She is also the author of Hijacked Justice, Dealing with the Past in the Balkans. She will speak Tuesday night at Western Michigan University.
A link with more details about Ilona Sobotic's address can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.